From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill on The Miracle Hunter. We like to talk about saints on this show, and this program in particular will be no different. We've got two future American saints, perhaps future people to be featured on They Might Be Saints, the EWTN television program of mine that airs on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And we've got stories of two people on the path to sainthood today. We're talking today with Father Gabriel O'Donnell, who is the vice postulator for the newly named Venerable Rose Hawthorne. And you might recognize the name Hawthorne. Yes, she is related to the famous American author Nathaniel Hawthorne. And also we'll be connecting with Bishop Larry Silva all the way in Honolulu, who is going to be talking to us about the servant of God, Joseph Dutton, and his cause there in Hawaii. So we're excited to talk about two of these up-and-coming future American saints today. And speaking of future American saints, you can check out my series, They Might Be Saints. There's the episode on Rhoda Wise coming up on April 10th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. In Canton, Ohio, Rhoda Wise was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles. One of them was experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica. So I'll be relating her remarkable story in that episode, which will be airing on April 10th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And check out my other program, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. We have a brand new episode coming out. I'm always excited when the new episodes come out. We have so many episodes that we filmed, but this is another new one in a string of new ones. And so on Saturday, April 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, I'll be going to Kildare, and I'll be exploring the life of Ireland's most famous female saint, St. Bridget of Kildare, who was renowned as a miracle worker. So check that one out, April 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Explore with the Miracle Hunter. We'll be going to Ireland. Later in the program, we'll be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project. For today, we have Our Lady of Ujaras in Costa Rica from the 16th century. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Annunciata Asteria Concetti from 1800 to 1882 from Italy. You guessed it. And the question of the week, does the variability in stigmata cases invalidate the phenomena as being miraculous? I'll try my best to answer that one in just a little bit. And the miracle of the week, miracle of the day is the canonization miracle of Francisco and Jacinta Marto, the healing of Lucas Maido de Oliveira, who accidentally fell from a height of 6.5 meters, and that was the miracle used for his canonization. So we'll be talking about that one a little bit later in the program. Let's take a look at the miracle news. Each week we talk about the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And we had some pretty big miracle news this week. It was the Vatican revealed the 1951 decree rejecting the Lipa apparition that's in the Philippines in 1948. And a little side story on this one is that this has gone back and forth from the local bishop to the Vatican with approvals and condemnations, and the Vatican has condemned this apparition, and they always referenced this 1951 document from the Pope. But the document did not exist, according to many people. And even I didn't necessarily believe it existed. I had contacted the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, and I said, can I please see this document? And they said it'll be available from the secret Vatican archives in 100 years. Well, I wouldn't be alive then to see that, so I was kind of disappointed. But the document has now been released. And so the Archdiocese of Lipa announced on Tuesday, March 19th, that the Vatican has in fact revealed the controversial 1951 decree declaring that there was nothing supernatural in the alleged apparition of the Virgin Mary in Lipa in Batangas in the Philippines. And devotees have long claimed that the Vatican decree doesn't exist, and while the Catholic Church has declined to publish the document until just now. Now, the alleged apparition made headlines just recently when there was a justice in the Philippines who got a priest in trouble for speaking against the apparitions, this quote, liable for offending religious feelings. And so I think that related to this apparition in 1948. So I think that the bishops' conference knew that something had to happen, and that is what happened, is that the bishops' conference in fact intervened. And so the Vatican ruling was approved in an audience with Pope Pius XII on March 29th, 1951, and was authenticated by the current prefect of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith under Pope Francis, that is Cardinal Victor Fernandez. And so this 1951 decree, originally in Italian, reads, I'm going to read it, on the 28th day of May 1951, by the order of the Most Holy Father's will, the apostolic delegate is to authorize the apostolic administrator to issue a document from the Curia in which it is declared that the events of Lipa, after serious investigation, turns out not to have a supernatural origin and character. In audience with His Holiness, Thursday, March 29th, 1951, and it was certified authentic by Victor Cardinal Fernandez, prefect. And so this is an amazing thing that has come out. And in addition to this document, it's been revealed that the letter of Mother Cecilia of Jesus, which was sent to the Pope, in fact, where she confessed that this was a false apparition, this has also been released to the bishops of the Philippines. So this long-standing question of where is that 1951 letter signed by the Pope? Well, it's been released now, and it'll be available at the Miracle Hunter website, or check out the Facebook page of the Miracle Hunter. I have that posted there. So a mystery is solved related to the Lipa apparitions. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week, where we ask a trivia question, give out a prize to an emailer that gets the right answer. The prize is the Miracle Hunter image of the faces of Mary. In the question from last week, we talked about St. Patrick, one of my favorite saints. And according to Irish legend, St. Patrick changed his name to Patricius after becoming a priest. What was his name at birth? And the answer is Maiwin Sukot. I think St. Patty is a little more catchy than that, but that's the correct answer. And that was sent in by Irene Horgan from Middlebury, Connecticut. Thanks, Irene, for your answer. You'll be receiving the prize, the image of the faces of Mary. Now, for this week, the question is, we'll be talking about the Holy Face Devotion, and the Holy Face Devotion goes back, perhaps, to the legend of St. Veronica. And so the question for today is, what is she known as the patron saint of? The question again, what is Veronica known as the patron saint of? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be the fastest respondent with the right answer. Answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Gabriel O'Donnell, the vice postulator for Venerable Rose Hawthorne, who was just elevated on the path to sainthood. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that I love talking about saints, and in specific American saints, and even more specific, future American saints. And I've written a book called They Might Be Saints, and produce a television series called They Might Be Saints, because I'm so interested in this phenomenon of people on the path to sainthood from the United States. And in my book, I think I have 25 people listed who are venerables and blesseds before they have all their miracles and are declared saints by Rome. But we can add another to the list. There's 26 now, venerables and blesseds, because just coming out of Rome, there was a declaration that Rose Hawthorne has now been declared venerable, meaning that she has lived a life of heroic virtue as recognized by Rome. Well, we're so excited today to be joined by Father Gabriel O'Donnell, the vice postulator for the cause of Venerable Rose Hawthorne. Welcome to the show today, Father, and congratulations on this big jump for her sainthood cause.
Thank you so much. It's a great joy to be with you. And a wonderful moment in the life of the church in America to have another person declared to be of heroic virtue by the church.
Absolutely. Tell me about where you were when you heard the news, or how did you find out about this? Because as a vice postulator, I've talked to all the vice postulators, and I know it's a lot of work that goes into this.
Yes. I got a message in the morning right after we sang Lauds, and I'm stationed at the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C., and I got a message from another friar who was away, and he had seen the Vatican website and the notification of the decree of heroic virtue, so he sent me a message. That's how I found out. But of course, it didn't take long for the news to percolate along the Dominican hotline. You know,
no call from the Pope or the prefect of the Frate Castellana.
No, nothing.
But nonetheless, an exciting time. And I think that what happens with all these, when it hits the news and American Catholics hear about it, they want to know, who was this person who is being considered for sainthood and who's moving along to step two from servant of God, venerable, hopefully blessed and saint after that. But tell us a little bit. I think people are fascinated by the connection to Nathaniel Hawthorne, the famous American.
That's author. Right. Yes,
tell us who she was. Who was Rose Hawthorne?
She was the most fascinating person. She was the daughter of, there were three children in the Hawthorne family, two girls and a boy. And she was the youngest, Rose, and she was quite an attractive woman, you know, red hair, a fiery temperament, but was brought up in this atmosphere of culture, because of course her father, being both involved in the diplomatic service for the United States, and also being a published author, she was brought up in a circle of literary elites and educated people, you know, kind of sophisticated people, but they were never financially wealthy. So she was a kind of strange combination of both having access to the kind of, you might say, the higher levels of society, but they were never really wealthy, and so therefore never had the kind of security that perhaps might have been true of other people in that social class. She was talented. You know, she could write, she could paint, and but her life was very difficult in this sense that her father died when she was a young woman, and her mother was left with these three children. They moved to Germany because of financial constraints, and eventually she married this literary man, George Parsons Lathrop. And so they were madly in love with one another. It was a beautiful relationship. They had a child that tragically died when he was 4 years old, Francis, of diphtheria. And so she lost her father, she lost her mother, and she lost her child. And that really, and then in her own sensitive nature, she suffered a very serious postpartum depression. So she knew a lot about, not only about a kind of, the need for an inner life in order to be creative and artistic and to write and to paint, but she knew also about interior suffering and pain. And what happened, of course, was that eventually she and George became Roman Catholics, much to the consternation of a lot of American Protestants. And in the process of conversion, Rose found an outlet for the kind of fiery and energetic temperament that she possessed, because the liturgical and spiritual life of Roman Catholicism really absorbed a lot of her drive and her energy. And she and he began to do things for others, like they would give talks in these, Catholic literary societies. They wrote a history of the Georgetown Visitation Convent, and they became really quite active in the Catholic world. Gradually, their marriage fell apart in large measure because of George's difficulties with alcohol, and they eventually separated. They had a church permitted separation, with the intention that they would eventually come back together again. though Rose gradually became to realize that it wasn't going to be possible. And during that separation, she wanted to devote herself to the needs of the poor, and the most outcast people in society at that time were those with afflicted with cancer. So during that separation, she went on a stint of being trained in a hospital, and it was during that separation that George died. And this was the great kind of climactic heartache of her life, that the man that she loved so much, even though they couldn't live together, she never stopped loving him. But that turned her to, a more serious full-time dedication of her life to the service of the poor. And she and a woman who joined with her, Alice Huber, moved gradually towards founding a religious community. And through the kind of almost happenstance meeting with a Dominican priest, Father Clement Tinti, they drifted into the Dominican order. They became tertiaries of the Dominican order and then founded this sisterhood. And from then on in, Rose Hawthorne took the name Mother Mary Alfonsa. And her life then is one very firm dedication and selfless service to those in need, whether it be the cancerous poor or it be her own sisters that she had to form and lead. The most unique thing, probably, and daring part of the whole project of serving the cancerous poor, which caused a lot of questioning, was that she wanted to serve the cancerous poor without charging them for anything. So it was a free service. And therefore, a lot of the burden of her work was contacting benefactors, finding ways of raising money. And she did this remarkably without ever stopping to take care of the patients themselves and caring for her sisters. So she showed a tremendous amount of dedication and energy. So she was, she was a socialite. She was a married woman. She was a mother. She was a widow. And then she became a religious. And so, I mean, it's a very interesting life. And nothing that she put her hand to was done in a kind of mediocre way. She was a woman who was so driven by this interior spirit and longing for the fulfillment of love and the encounter with God, that everything she put her hand to, she did with absolute energy. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of it.
Wonderful. We've been talking today with Father Gabriel O'Donnell, the Vice Postulator for now Venerable Rose Hawthorne. Thank you, Father, for going through that incredible retelling of a remarkable life, as you mentioned, somebody who had different aspects of her life that most people you don't see. They're all in the same person, so that's quite remarkable. When you put together the positio, the position paper about the virtue of the person's life, what were the main virtues that you focused on when you submitted that big red book to Rome?
I was the postulator for the diocesan cause, and then when it goes to Rome, there is a Roman postulator, and it was there that the positio was put together. So I was not really the author of the positio for this cause. I was for another cause, but not for this. But of course, the main virtues were that you see in her is this. What would we say? Well, both humility and this magnanimity is the virtue that we would technically call it. That is the ability to think of doing great things for God. She was a woman who had vision and was never deterred by the obstacles or the failures that she encountered. So, you know, the positio, I've never really read the positio because it's not available to me. That's only available once there's a beatification.
Well, and then for her to move on to beatification, she needs a miracle. So the search for miracles is on. How is that going?
Going well. There are two or three reported miracles, as we would say, and they have been submitted to the dicastery for the causes of saints. And that means that they will have to go through the lengthy and very thorough process of being vetted by the congregation. And that will involve a medical analysis or testing, a theological vetting or testing, and also an historical vetting or testing. And that means that a tremendous amount of research and gathering of documents has to be made. Most miracles today that are approved by the church are healings, mm-hmm. almost all of them. Not always, but most of them are healings. And that means that the amount of, given the state of healthcare today, it means that you have to gather a tremendous number of medical records, and you have to provide also a narrative that explains the meaning of some of these tests and graphs. And there's a lot of technical stuff that has to be included in the presenting of a reported miracle.
And perhaps most difficult of all, they can only be seeking the intercession of just one saint in order for it to be clear to Rome.
That's right. Yes, you have to present proof that this miracle has been attained through the intercession of the particular servant of God. But of course, that never excludes the petitions to Christ and to Our Lady.
Right.
So it's not a question of saying that you can only pray to this saint, because of course, the holy person that you're asking for their intercession really only has the, what would we say, the ability to be an effective intercessor because of their relationship with Jesus Christ and their being the son or daughter of Christ's mother, Mary. So it's a kind of, But yes, you have to provide proof that there's been an ongoing recourse to this particular servant of God. And that's why it's so important when people believe that they have experienced or seen a miracle, that they very carefully make a record of how they have gotten a group of people, let's say, to say the prayer for Mother Alphonsa to intercede for them.
And for people who perhaps want to find out more about Mother Alphonsa, Rose Hawthorne, yeah. as we might say, is there a website or other place where they could learn about her life and perhaps find an intercessory prayer?
There is. They can go to the Hawthorne Dominican website, the Hawthorne Dominican Sisters. So that's hawthorne-dominicans.org. Or they can just type in the Rose Hawthorne Guild, because on that site you will see there is the there's a place where you can join the guild. Now, the guild, of course, is a joining with other people who believe in Mother's holiness. It's a guild is a group of people who commit themselves to praying for this person's eventual canonization. But in the process, there are certain spiritual benefits that are offered, masses that are offered throughout the year for the intentions of the candidate for canonization. And there are newsletters that are published periodically. And you will find on the website that prayer for canonization. In fact, there is even on the website a very nice little video in which the sisters are praying that prayer for canonization of Mother Mary Alphonsa, or Rose Hawthorne, as she's called.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Gabriel O'Donnell, the Vice Postulator for the Venerable Rose Hawthorne cause. We wish you the best of luck, and we've got something
Thank
else
you.
To pray for in our church in the United yes. States,
yes.
a future saint yes. Moving Venerable yes. Rose Hawthorne along the path yes. to sainthood with some miracles through her intercession. Thank you so much, Father, yes. for joining us on
You're
today's
welcome.
Program.
Thank you very much. Bye now.
God bless. And that was Father Gabriel O'Donnell talking to us about the amazing life of Rose Hawthorne. I encourage you to find out more about her and seek her intercession. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And people can write into questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be selecting the best question each week. I also like answering questions when I give a presentation. So I've been giving a lot of talks recently, and I gave one recently where we had a great question. For people who want to have me speak at their parish, I've been speaking a lot about Eucharistic miracles during this time of Eucharistic revival. Different parishes are having me speak on that topic. And we had an interesting question that popped up. A young man actually spoke up in front of the room to ask this question, and I thought it was a good one. It is, does the variability in stigmata cases invalidate the phenomena as being miraculous? So that was, I thought, was an excellent question. Basically, the questioner is pointing to the fact that stigmata, which is the miraculous or the phenomena of people being marked with the wounds of Christ, there's a great variability, meaning that, for example, you take St. Francis, who is the first known stigmatic, and the wounds in his hands were protrusions of nails coming out of his palms. And then other saints have these bloody wounds in their wrists or their hands or their side or their feet. Therese Newman of Germany had 60 lash marks on her back. Some have wounds in the forehead, and their wounds are different sizes and have different ways of manifesting. They're all different. And so we might say, wait a minute, wouldn't it be such that if, the crucifixion happened through the wrists, as indicated by the Shroud of Turin, all the authentic cases of stigmata would show that the same size wound would happen in the same place on the body? And wouldn't that be proof that that is a true phenomena, not some sort of a psychosomatic or, mental manifestation of a wound on a body? So it's a good question. And so I think that what's fascinating about stigmata is we say, could this be the case that all these people had psychoses or such a deep, deep devotion or love that they were making those wounds manifest on their own? And, it seems like a viable theory, of course. And then you look at all the cases of studies on the stigmata done over the years. And strangely, or I guess appropriately, there's not been a single study that through hypnosis has ever produced non-superficial wounds on a person's body. And so we know that it cannot be purely a mind-over-body phenomenon. And so this is probably one of these questions that we have to ask God when we get to heaven. And I know I say that a lot, and it's disappointing when I do, but we might not know why there's such a variability in this. But my theory is, anyway, that God meets the mystic halfway, where there was, of course, the true wounds of Christ, the way that Christ was truly crucified. And then we have the way that a mystic, through meditating on the crucifix in his room, or through photos, or through his mind, may imagine the crucifixion. So it's possible that God meets the mystic halfway and blesses or curses them, however you want to consider these wounds, with the phenomena as a result of meeting them in the middle of what the mystic brings to the table and what God allows to happen to them. So a fascinating phenomenon, and I think it's truly amazing. And coming up in this year, we have the 800th anniversary of the first stigmata, which is St. Francis of Assisi. So that is somewhat of a big big anniversary coming up. And so thank you, young man, for your question about the variability in stigmata cases. That was a good one. Thanks for your courage asking that one in front of the room. Now let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. And we all know Fatima May 13th, or Lourdes February 11th, or Guadalupe December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. It might be a feast day or an anniversary of a miracle or the building of a basilica or some other way that Mary is celebrated or honored in countries all around the world. And so for today's day, we've got Our Lady of Ujaras in Costa Rica in the 16th century. And the story goes that in the 16th century, a native was fishing in the Pacuare River when he saw a wooden box that he picked up without opening it and brought it to his people. When he reached Ujaras on his way to Cartago, he could not lift the box even with the help of others. They opened the box to discover a beautiful statue of the Virgin Mary, and he told the monks at Conception of Ujaras Monastery that from this place spread the devotion to Our Lady of Ujaras to several parts of the country, including the ancient capital of Cartago. And so that is Our Lady of Ujaras in Costa Rica in the 16th century. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can connect to 365dayswithmary.com, visit the Facebook page with over 10,000 followers, or download the free app from the Apple App Store, 365 Days with Mary, Marian Calendar. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. This is a new segment that we do, we've been doing in 2024, where we find a miracle that happened on today's date at some point in history. So we look at the, for today's date, we look at the miracle of the canonization of Blessed Jacinta and Francisco Marto, the Fatima children, who were canonized on May 13th, 2017. I was there to see that myself. So in this case, in March of 2013, while playing with his little sister at his grandfather's house in Camp Mourão in the state of Paraná in Brazil, there was a boy, Lucas Maida de Oliveira, who accidentally fell from a height of 6.5 meters. In the fall, the child suffered a serious open cranioencephalic trauma with loss of brain substance, severe coma, additional axonal damage, serious danger of death, or a serious consequence. That was a quote from the report. The child's father picked him up from the sidewalk immediately after the accident and invoked Our Lady of Fatima and the Fatima children, and prayed that very same night for the family together with the community of Carmelite nuns and the Medical Council of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, which examined the case in February of 2017, which seemed like it was right before that canonization, declared the subsequent complete and very rapid recovery to be scientifically inexplicable. And so that is the miracle of the day for today in the year 2013. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week where we talk about the television series They Might Be Saints, which airs on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And we talk a little bit about the sainthood news because we talk about those servants of God, those venerables, those blesseds who are on the path to sainthood before they have all their miracles and are declared a saint. So we always like to keep you up to date on who's coming down the pipeline. So on Thursday, March 14th, the Holy Father received in audience His Most Reverend Eminence Cardinal Marcelo Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized the same dicastery to promulgate the decree regarding the martyrdom of the servant of God, Max Josef Metzger, a diocesan priest who founded the secular institute Societas Christi Regis. He was born in 1887 in Germany and killed out of hatred of the faith, odium fidei, on April 17, 1944, in Brandenburg in Germany. And according to the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints website, he was a diocesan priest, a founder of the secular institute Christi Regis, and he was aware that the commitment to peace and ecumenism, as well as the rejection of the Reich state in the name of the primacy of Christ, could cost him his life. He had expressed willingness to give his life in a response to God's will. And again, there was a quote from the website for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And we have Max Josef Metzger, who will be declared blessed. With one miracle, he will become Saint Josef Metzger. And that's today's, that's the update on saints coming down the pipeline. Let's take a look at the might be saint of the day. We look for servants of God, venerables, or blesseds who have a feast day or a death anniversary on today's date. So for today's date, we have Blessed Annunziata Asteria Concetti, who lived from 1800 to 1882 in Italy. And her feast day is today on March 23rd. And she was born on May 9th in 1800 in Rovato in Italy. And she was orphaned at age 7, and she was raised by her grandmother. At the age of 17, she opened a school for poor girls in her home, and she taught school at Rovato, Italy, at the age of 22, and then at Cemo Via Monica in Italy. And she helped found the Sisters of Dorothy of Cemo and served in the order for 40 years. And she died on March 23, 1882, in Cemo in Italy of natural causes, declared venerable on May 13, 1889, by Pope John Paul II, and beatified also by Pope John Paul II on April 12, 1991. With a second miracle, Blessed Annunziata will become Saint Annunziata. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about Joseph Dutton. Could he be the third saint from the state of Hawaii. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People have who listen to this show have probably tuned into my television series called They Might Be Saints, which is a show about Americans on the path to sainthood and the search for canonization miracles. And of course, when we talk about canonization of future saints, we talk about the four stages: servant of God, venerable, blessed, and then with two miracles, verified by Rome, a saint. And we have a number of cases in the United States, perhaps as many as around 100, of people who are advancing along this path, and somewhere around 25 who are venerables and blesseds before they have attained the designation of sainthood in Rome. And so we have somebody coming to us that's a father, servant of God, Joseph Dutton from Hawaii. You all know about St. Damien of Molokai or St. Marianne Cope as being the two saints of that state. But believe it or not, there's a third person who's advancing along the cause towards canonization. And just this past January, we saw the movement from the diocesan phase to the Roman phase related to this cause. So we're excited to see somebody who is around the corner, perhaps, moving ahead to the next stage in sainthood. We're so grateful today to be joined by Bishop Larry Silva of Honolulu, all the way from the great state of Hawaii, joining us today to talk to us about this future American saint, Joseph Dutton. Welcome to the program today, Bishop Silva.
Thank you. Aloha to you all.
Aloha, Bishop, and thank you for joining us today to talk about Joseph Dutton. And as I mentioned, most Americans know, American Catholics know St. Damien of Molokai. Some might know St. Marianne Cope, but nobody knows that there's a third, potentially. Tell us, who was the man, Joseph Dutton, going from Civil War veteran to a missionary with Father Damien? Who was the man, Joseph Dutton?
Yeah, so Joseph Dutton was born in Stowe, Vermont in 1843. And at the age of four, his family moved to Wisconsin. He was very interested in military things, and as the Civil War started, he became a soldier in the Civil War for the Union, and he was a quartermaster sergeant during the war. He was also charged with the rather gruesome task of disinterring bodies that had been hastily buried on battlefields and putting them into national cemeteries. And so I think he developed what we now call post-traumatic stress disorder. So after his military service, he married for about a year. It was a disastrous marriage. His wife was unfaithful and very extravagant. And so they separated after a year. And then he began drinking heavily. He worked at a distillery and wanted to, indulge as much as he could, and did many dissolute things that people who drink too heavily often do. And so he lived a life that he was not proud of. But in around 1881 or 82, he wanted to do penance for his dissolute life. And so he first went to Gethsemane Monastery, thinking that was his vocation and the way to do penance. He was there a little over a year, but it was discerned that that was not his vocation. And around that time, he heard about Father Damien and his work with the patients with leprosy in Molokai. And so he volunteered to go there and help Father Damien. So he arrived in Kalapapa, which is the little tiny north peninsula of the island of Molokai, where the leprosy settlement is still in existence. although people are not confined there as they were before, forcibly. Nevertheless, Joseph Dutton went there to help Father Damien. So he was there about 2 years with Father Damien, and then Father Damien died. But altogether, he was there 44 years.
Wow.
He did not take any salary during that time, just lived on the room and board that was provided for him. But during that time, he was a great companion to Father Damien during his lifetime. But then he was in charge of the boys' home because many of the people who were sent there were minors. And so Father Damien established two homes, one for boys and one for girls. And St. Mary Ann Cope ultimately took over the girls' home. And Joseph Dutton took over the boys' home. So he ran the boys' home for close to 40 years. Of course, he was very hands-on. He became very proficient in medicine, and even though he wasn't a doctor, but he helped dress sores and even did some minor surgery under the doctor's supervision. So he was just a real asset to the people there, and loved them. He was a daily communicant. He was somebody who took his faith very seriously. By the way, he became a Catholic after his conversion, after his repentance, and at the age of 40, he became a Catholic, and it was at that point that he wanted to do his life of penance.
Amazing. We're talking today with Bishop Larry Silva of Honolulu about the servant of God, Joseph Dutton, and the canonization cause that is underway. And Bishop, as we talk about this cause, all causes have sort of a different backstory of who launched it or who decided to put the effort behind investigating the life of the servant of God and advancing it forward. How did this cause come to you or to others that that moved move this forward?
Yeah, so of course we always knew about Joseph Dutton and the history, his history with Father Damien and the leprosy patients there in Molokai. But it was about 10 years ago, a psychiatrist named Maria de Vera came to see me, and she was very interested in promoting the cause of Joseph Dutton. So I told her, well, you know, let's get a group together and see what interest there might be. So we did get a group together, which eventually became the Joseph Dutton Guild after a year or two of discussing the prospects and the procedures. So then the guild formed, I'm going to say about 8 years ago, was formally established, and then Maria eventually became the president of the guild and has been doing most of the work. And we were fortunate enough to recruit Monsignor Robert Sarno to be our advisor and now my personal Episcopal representative for the cause. Monsignor Sarno is the priest of Brooklyn, and now retired, but for 38 years, he worked for the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints in Rome.
And so that's a good advisor to have right there.
Yes, very, very good advisor. So he has been working very diligently with us and seems to be very optimistic about this cause. So we're very grateful him and all of the work that he has done.
Wonderful. And we talked a little bit at the very beginning about how the diocesan phase has now closed there in the cause, and that's a big first step. And now it heads to Rome. Tell us a little bit about what will happen next as far as the development of his positio or moving towards the recognition of his heroic virtue.
Yeah, so we have appointed a Roman postulator, someone who is very experienced with the postulation for sainthood causes, and he will take all the material that we sent. I believe it was a whole trunkload of documents, and sift through them and write a positio, which is basically a paper describing the life and virtue of the servant of God, Joseph Dutton, and including people's devotion to him and his intercessory powers. So, you know, they want to know that there are people who are devoted to him, who look up to him as a holy man, and who pray to him for intercession for various needs.
And speaking of those needs or the seeking of favors or miracles, currently a miracle cannot be used to elevate him to beatification until he has officially been declared venerable by Rome. But people can pray to Joseph Dutton and seek his intercession, and the cause will keep track of all those cases that have been recorded. Have there been stories of favors or the intercession of Joseph Dutton in these early stages of his canonization cause?
Yes, there have. And in fact, there is a healing that is currently being investigated. And even though he has not yet been declared venerable, if he is declared venerable, this healing would count, if you will, for that miracle, if it is indeed judged to be a miracle. So that the documentation for that has already been submitted to Rome, to the Dicastery for the Congregation of the Saints, and so it could be a simultaneous process of his being declared venerable and the miracle being accepted, I suppose.
That would be wonderful. There have been some rare cases where venerable and blessed have followed within a month or so of each other, so perhaps this is one that we're looking at today. We've been talking today with Bishop Larry Silva of Honolulu about Joseph Dutton and his cause for canonization. And for people who might be interested in the story of Joseph Dutton, his incredible a turnaround, you might say, in his life and his life of holiness, as hopefully Rome will recognize at some point in the near future. So the website is josephdutton.org is the guild website for Joseph Dutton, and people can go there to find out more about his incredible life and also find out some prayers, intercessory prayers, seeking his help for favors and miracles. Well, we're so grateful to you, Bishop Larry Silva, joining us all the way from Honolulu to talk about the incredible life of Joseph Dutton, and we've got something else to pray for perhaps a future saint coming out of the state of Hawaii.
Yeah. We would appreciate all of your prayers. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us on the program today. And we've been talking with Bishop Larry Silva about Joseph Dutton. Thank you so much, Bishop, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you, and God bless.
God bless. That was Bishop Larry Silva talking to us about Joseph Dutton. Check out the website josephdutton.org for more information on this future saint and to find out about his canonization cause. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Father Gabriel O'Donnell, talking to us about the canonization cause of Venerable Rose Hawthorne, and also the Bishop of Honolulu, Larry Silva, talking to us about Servant of God, Joseph Dutton, and his cause for sainthood. Check out a new episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter on Saturday, April 6th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Kildare, I'll be exploring the life of Ireland's most famous female saint, St. Bridget of Kildare, who is a renowned miracle worker. And I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.